95.7 Ben FM presents Her Story with Kathy Romano.
Welcome to Her Story. I'm your host, Kathy Romano. My next guest is a psychotherapist that takes a holistic approach with a focus on positive and mindful therapy, art therapy, stress reduction, and managing anxiety. Kelly Brunton is here today to tell us her story. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, I'm doing good.
So give us the definition of a psychotherapist.
Basically, what I do is I help clients with typical things like anxiety and depression, but psychotherapy is a little more intense, a little more direct. This is deep, intense, emotional work.
What is your schooling like?
So I have a master's degree in clinical counseling psychology, and I also took some additional courses to become a licensed clinician.
What areas do you focus on?
Well, I would consider myself to be a woman's therapist. So I help a lot of adolescent and 20-something women. Again, anxiety, depression, I see a lot of body image issues, eating disorders, loss, a lot of trauma. So I would say that I help women with a lot of issues, but one of the things that I kind of steer away from is substance abuse, and I don't work with men.
So you just work with women?
I just work with women, also transgendered women.
And I saw that you're trained in trauma.
Yeah, it's really cool, actually. So it's all about how trauma can actually impact our DNA. It's really interesting. So it's the idea that traumatic events that we experience can actually change the fabric of our DNA and make certain genes kind of express and others dormant. There's a lot of research about, for example, how Holocaust victims, how PTSD was actually passed down through their children and grandchildren.
Wow.
Yes. Actually, the research goes on to say that those ancestors, those generations, have higher cortisol levels. Not only does trauma impact our body, but it can actually be passed down to our children and our children's children.
That is so interesting.
Yeah, it's amazing. I'm 100% Armenian. So I really got interested in this subject because I wanted to learn more about my ancestors and the Armenian genocide and how, you know, my fight or flight response, my language for fear was sort of fabricated through the experiences of my great grandmothers.
So what did you find exactly?
I knew growing up that my great grandmothers had been victims of trauma from the genocide. And I was always kind of anxious. And as I worked through my own mental health issues, I really found that the way I described fear, the way that I described worst case scenarios, was sort of symbolic of what my ancestors had experienced.
I would have never thought that.
It's brand new. It's cutting edge. But, you know, they're even saying now that perhaps our own traumatic events are impacting sort of like, for example, like sperm quality or our eggs or even like in utero. Yeah. Babies in utero whose mothers experience traumatic events, like those things can be expressed as those children grow up.
So do you work to fix that if you can?
I work to help people sort of uncover the pain of their ancestors. There's, I think in any family, there's unexpected events or trauma. And I help people to sort of feel that pain in a healthy way, to kind of bring forth the story of the people before them and revamp that into something that is healthy and integrate that into their story now. There's pain, I think, in any family, but I think it can lay dormant in generations until someone's ready to feel it.
What about that holistic approach?
I tend to empower my clients to find healthy coping skills and healthy alternatives to automatically using medication. I think medication is very powerful and some people really do need it, but it's all about having different tools in your tool bag. I use a lot of essential oils in my office. I encourage people to take vitamin D during the fall and winter. A lot of people who have anxiety and depression are actually vitamin D deficient. So, you know, I encourage people to take vitamin D. I encourage people to find coping skills that work for them.
Fall is filled with beautiful colors, great weather, and endless activities. Fall and winter, people kind of staying inside, and seasonal affective disorder.
Yes, yes.
Well, otherwise known as the winter blues, right? People get that. It's real.
It is real. Fall anxiety, winter blues, it's all real. And almost everyone experiences it. You're not going out in the sun as much. A lot of people, you know, they get up for work in the dark. They go home in the dark. So it's all about going outside, getting that natural sunlight when you can, but also about being in tune with your body. And like I said, a lot of people are vitamin D deficient and they just don't know it.
Back when I was in college, I had to do a final project. My major was communications, but my final project was on sunlight therapy, like natural sunlight therapy. and going out into the sunlight and how it does actually help with these winter blues.
Yes, it does. It absolutely does. You know, I always encourage people, you know, take a walk, sit outside for 15 minutes a day if you can, or on your lunch break. Just getting that natural sun exposure is really helpful.
You would get along great with my mom. My mom has told me that since I was a kid.
My grandma used to tell me that.
She said, go outside for 15 minutes a day. That's what she would say to me. Mm-hmm. Even if it was freezing, just go out for a little bit, come back in. Or if it's, you know, really hot and, you know, kind of unbearable. Sometimes it gets really hot around here. But just go outside 15 minutes, come back in.
It's so true. You know, a lot of the things I think that our moms and our grandmoms told us growing up, there's actually now there's science behind it. You know what I mean?
So they did know what they were talking about. I've heard finding the right therapist is like dating.
Yes.
You have to kind of look around until you find the person for you.
Yeah. Well, you know, I work with a lot of people who come in and sometimes they'll say, like, you know, I didn't really like my last therapist, or it didn't really work out for me. And I think it's all about finding the right fit. There have been a ton of studies about why is psychotherapy successful? Why is counseling successful? Like, what makes the difference, you know, in terms of people making progress? And what they found was that it was all about the connection. Credentials are important. Therapeutic orientation is important. But what's most important is that connection that you feel with the person you're working with.
Yeah. So if somebody does want to make an appointment with you or contact you, what's the best way they can do that?
You can go to www.kellybrunton.com. I also like to tell people, if you're trying to find a therapist, there's also Psychology Today. A lot of people don't know about Psychology Today, actually, but it's basically like Tinder for therapists. You can go on and view people's profiles. You can make an appointment. You can look at, you know, how much the average session costs, what insurances they take. You can even search for a therapist solely by your insurance.
So you founded a clothing line. What does that have to do with therapy?
A lot of people ask me, like, why clothes? Like, what was that about? I see a lot of adolescents and 20-something women. And what I find is that a lot of times people will either look on YouTube or look on Instagram, watch a YouTube video about anxiety or depression before they talk to a therapist. And YouTube is an amazing platform. Instagram, I mean, these sites are, it's a miracle because it helps you not feel alone. So many people share their story. But at the same time, free information isn't always accurate information. And so I wanted to put something out there, like, it's about clothes, but it's also about creating a platform where I provide real, accurate psychoeducation about mental health for people.
On this website for the clothing?
On the website for the clothing company and on my Instagram. So it's about putting accurate information out there, basically.
So people can follow you on Instagram for accurate information.
Yes, yes, and cute clothes.
What's your Instagram?
It's at Breathe and Be Still. Be Still is spelled B-S-T-Y-L-L.
So tell me a little bit about the clothing then. What is it?
It's basically a mindfulness company. I'm a mindfulness junkie. I always try and practice mindfulness. I try and meditate, you know, as often as I can. So it's a mindfulness-inspired company that encourages people to be present, be still. And we donate to mental health organizations. We provide psychoeducation in the community and really just help connect people with resources.
Is it workout clothes?
It is sort of like comfy, free-spirited kind of clothes. Like, there's joggers. The sweatshirt dress is really popular for fall. We have sweatshirts, blankets. So it's about cozy, feel-good clothes.
And shopping can be a therapy in itself.
That's true.
You mentioned meditation. I actually just started to meditate and I downloaded this app that kind of teaches you. I really like it and I'm really enjoying meditation. When I heard about it years ago, I kind of thought, I can't just sit there for 10, 15, 20 minutes and not think about anything. Who are these people doing this? But I finally gave in and I tried this introductory program on this app and it really was great and I like it. But I do feel like I need a little more guidance with it. Like, where do I go next? So I did the 7 days and now I need to know where to go. What do you suggest? How did you learn to meditate?
Well, I took a mindfulness course in graduate school and I've also just been going to seminars and workshops. And I feel like the expectation out there is that when you meditate, you're going to be this Zen, spiritual, peaceful yogi. And like, it's about having just complete peace and serenity. And that really isn't what meditation is about. It can be. It can be a relaxing experience. But it's about being present with your stuff. And a lot of times when you meditate, and this is a common misconception, like my clients tell me all the time, stuff comes up. And meditation can be uncomfortable. It's about sitting with your stuff. Meditation really is about noticing your thoughts in a particular way on purpose. So it's, you know, our minds are kind of like monkeys. They're like swinging from branch to branch, thought to thought to thought. So it's about gently calling yourself back. If you meditate, and this is for anybody else out there, if you're trying meditation, you're like, oh, I'm more anxious, or it's hard, or it makes me uncomfortable. Most of the time, it's supposed to do that. You're turning towards your stuff throughout the day. I mean, we're all pleasure seeking. You know, we all want to avoid emotional pain, and we want to turn towards things that, you know, help us feel better. Obviously, a lot of what I do in my work is help people turn towards the thing that's making them uncomfortable, turn towards the pain.
Okay, so one of the days focused on thinking about something that would make you feel uncomfortable.
Ooh, yeah.
And that was part of it. And then sort of letting it go and moving on. But what are you supposed to do then mm-hmm. when you're meditating? So if that thought comes mm-hmm. to you mm-hmm. and then you let it go, then what?
I always take an issue with the idea of letting go. That phrase is thrown around so much in counseling and mental health and meditation that it's just like that it's a choice, like that you can just let it go.
Yeah, if I could let it go, I wouldn't be here.
Yeah, I think a lot of people feel that way. I think it's about just kind of turning towards it, reaching out, touching the pain and coming back, touching the pain and coming back.
And then how you react when you come back.
Building up a tolerance to it. So I'm sure whatever it was that you were thinking about, you know, it takes a lot of emotional energy. It's draining. So when you look at it and confront it, you're building up a tolerance slowly to it. I tell people all the time, I mean, letting go is, I don't really know if I believe in just letting it go.
Sure.
You know what I mean? It's hard.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Do you suggest that your patients meditate?
Meditation isn't for everyone. And I think a lot of therapists do this. It's all about finding what works for you. I do have clients that come in and they like me to guide them while they meditate. I can do that. And I also recommend, like you were saying, like you take guided meditations. And there are a lot of meditational videos on YouTube as well. So some meditate, but other people like to just talk things through. That's the thing about counseling. It isn't a one-size-fits-all thing. I mean, I have some people that come in and they just want to talk through it. And then I have other people that come in and they want to learn about the brain and learn about how stress affects the body. So I recommend trying meditation at least a handful of times. But it's supposed to be a little uncomfortable. Don't get discouraged.
Okay, so you focus on art therapy for some of your patients?
Yes. Yeah, I have a lot of people that love, love, love art therapy. It's just a variety of things. So I have an easel in my office and people love to use watercolors. I have some people that like to sketch. I have other people that like to create a safe space board. So it really depends on what people are interested in. I also like to use art therapy when I work with couples, or I do a lot of sibling work. I see a lot of teenagers. So creating a piece together without communicating, learning how to read each other's body language or use eye contact. I find that that's really cool.
I know you said adolescents, but do you have any younger children?
I actually don't specialize in working with kids.
Okay.
I would say I'd see like 14 and up.
Art therapy, I've only ever heard for young kids.
You're right about that. Art therapy is used a lot in like children's therapy or, you know, play therapy. Like a lot of therapists have like a sandbox in their room or little toys or things like that. When I first went out on the field, I was like, I'm going to work with everyone. Like I want to, you know, be everyone's therapist. But then I kind of worked on finding my niche and realizing where my strengths are. So I feel like adolescents, 14 and up is really where my strengths are for sure.
I just interviewed a music therapist. She would sing to patients on hospice.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's powerful.
So yeah, so I'm familiar with the music therapy and the art therapy as well, and the whole holistic approach.
I love taking a holistic approach. It empowers people to know that they have other tools. It's like building a tool bag and knowing what tools you have when things get hard. Because I know people can feel powerless sometimes, you know, when they're taking medication and nothing really works for them.
Yeah,
so
sure. And yeah. Sometimes, like you said, medication, some people need it, but mm-hmm. sometimes that's not the best approach for
yeah. them. Or sometimes, you know, other skills help, you know, just give you a variety of ways to cope.
Kelly, thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
If you'd like to find out more information or schedule an appointment with Kelly, you can go to her website. It's kellybruntoncounseling.com. And Kelly is spelled K-E-L-L-I-E. Or if you'd like to check out her clothing line, go to breatheandbestill.com. And be still is spelled B-S-T-Y-L-L. Kelly, thanks again for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
This is Her Story with Kathy Romano on 95.7 Ben FM.
My next guest is the CEO and founder of Party Host Helpers. How great would it be to have a party in your house and not really have to do anything and have people come in and help you plan this gathering? Well, Renee Patron is here today to tell us her story and the creation of her hosting business. Hi, Renee.
Hello.
Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
I'm like a lunatic when I'm having a party. I clean, I decorate, I set up, I make sure I have floral centerpieces. Everything has to be perfectly set before the first person arrives. And if somebody arrives and I'm still in the process of setting up, I start sweating and I start to panic that it's not all completely ready to go. Like, I love to just have it set, ready, and then the people can come. But the process leading up to it is so stressful that, like, everyone in my life is like, why do you host parties?
And then you don't get to enjoy it, right?
No, totally don't enjoy
and
it at all.
That's why I started this company, because I was in your shoes. And I had a lot of clients in the event world that have been in your shoes. So
you can help me.
We can help you. A lot of our clients, they're creative. They like food. They love to entertain. But they need that extra hand to come in. And we recommend an hour early, have them arrive, help you set the bar up, make sure that all your food's ready to go, take stuff in and out of the oven. And then when guests arrive, take coats, give them any direction that they need so you can actually talk to your guests and have a good time. But they'll also refill your drinks, make sure there's ice out, bring the food out, clean up.
Okay, so that's the main part is the cleanup, I hate having right? the mess. Like, even throughout the party, if it starts to pile up, I can't just sit and then enjoy.
And watch it pile up.
Yeah, I can't watch it pile up. I have to clear along the way.
Mm-hmm. And that's the beauty of it, right? Because you're having fun, but they're cleaning up as they go. So at the end of the night, it's not dishes or trash overflowing. So they do it as they go, and it makes much less craziness.
Let's take a step back, though. Uh-huh. Were you always an entertainer and party planning type of person?
Yeah. So I've had Events by Renee, my original company, my original baby, I say, for over 10 years now. Before that, I was the event planner at Mainline Today for a long time. And then just in my personal life, I always had friends over. I was a social coordinator, social director, and I just found a need for this. There's a niche in the Philadelphia market and beyond just to have someone come help you. So people kept asking me, do you have a bartender? You know, I would plan like huge weddings for these clients and their moms would come back to me and be like, I'm having something at my home. Do you know a bartender or a server? And I'm like, yeah, I can probably find someone in my network. And then from there, we just launched Party Host Helpers. It was originally like a supplement to my first business. But now that Party Host Helpers is going crazy. It's nationwide. We service over 500 clients a year, and we're growing minute by minute. So
it's nationwide, but it's based here in the Philadelphia area?
We're headquartered here. Yeah, I'm here until, you know, I decided to move to Florida. Somewhere warm.
Warm and sunny.
But yeah, I have regional directors, they're called, and they're basically like me in their own cities, and they bring in the business, and they network within their community, and they make sure that they hire amazing people through our system to go out and do their job. And people love it because it's a side gig for a lot of these helpers as well.
It's funny that you said you told a story about somebody contacted you saying, I'm having a party at my house. Do you have a bartender? We just had my brother's engagement party at my parents' house. And my mom called and said, do you have somebody that could bartend, maybe clean up a little bit? Do you know anybody that we could hire on the side to help? You would have been perfect.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's a perfect situation because I guess a lot of people ask me who our competition is, but it's really like, when people say that, do you know anyone? And, you know, maybe you get like the kid down the street to come do dishes or the bartender at your like local bar to come help. But A, they're not insured like we are. B, they could get sick. So then you don't have backup. We have a staff of over 500 people in our Philadelphia database alone that work for us.
So you're not going to cancel.
We're not going to cancel. No.
So talk about the cost a little bit. What does it cost to do something like this? Because it sounds like a great idea, but then sometimes people hear the cost and they're like, no, I'm just going to do it myself.
Our standard rate is $45 an hour per helper. The average party is about 3 or 4 hours, which brings it under $200. And for the peace of mind.
Really, for me to be able to enjoy it, that's my problem, is
and
being able
invaluable.
To sit back and enjoy it, you know, when everybody's at my house. Because then I feel like I actually felt bad after a party. This was last year around the holiday season. And there were people that came in from out of town. And the next day, I remember waking up just having a not great feeling. So I was like, I didn't even really talk to them.
And that's why I started it too. I experienced the same thing and so many others have. And it's not just the cleanup. I have clients call me and they're like, the food that was left over was salvaged because it didn't sit out all night. So, you know, the helpers...
So they'll pack it up, put it in the fridge for you?
Yeah.
That's perfect. Is there anything that they won't do?
I mean, let's see. Where's the line drawn? No, I mean, they mop floors, they throw trash out, they clean up broken glass. We've had people say, like, can you just occupy my kids for like an hour? So, you know...
Oh, really?
If they're specific with us, with what they need, then we'll place the person perfectly. It might be a kid's party and they're like, we need someone to watch the kids, not babysit, but make sure that the kids' activities are going well. We want someone upbeat who will keep them entertained. Then we're going to send someone who we know likes kids and has had experience.
Wow. Okay, so this is a really...
If it's an older crowd, maybe they want someone a little bit more mature, someone more professional, someone more polished. No problem. We can send that as well. A lot of these types of companies are coming on the scene in way of like a TaskRabbit, or like even I heard that Uber might be coming out with something like this. But we take pride in really placing the right person with the right client.
A little more personal.
Exactly.
When they come to your home, how are they dressed? Are they dressed a little more professionally? Are they in all black? Or are they wearing just regular clothing?
No. So our standard uniform is black pants, black shoes, a white or black button down. And then we have black aprons with our logo on them. Very discreet, that say Party Host Helpers.
Someone at the party would know that they were there to help. So in case they had a question or something like that.
Absolutely.
They would know that your staff is there to help.
With different events like Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur or Passover, we educate our helpers with just like a tip sheet if they're not familiar with the traditions.
Sure.
So they know what they're walking into as well.
Yeah.
And we do let the client connect with the helper ahead of time. If they want, they get the phone number, the email address, if they want to say, hey, here's the deal, here's my timeline for the day.
Can you give our listeners your top five tips when hosting a party?
When you send the invitation out, make sure that it definitely pops and it conveys what you want your party to be like. I've gotten invitations recently that were so blah that I didn't want to go to a party.
You didn't want to go because the invitation was nice. I didn't want to go.
I'm like, oh my gosh, it's going to be so beat, you know, with weddings or bigger events or even smaller events. Like, there's so much cool technology now with Evites and paperless posts to make it so personalized and fun and festive. And you want to capture your guests' attention then because everyone's so busy. So if you really want them to come to your party, make sure it's a good invitation. And again, it doesn't have to cost anything. There's really cool online websites now that can show the festiveness. Number two, you know how there's trash cans at your party? Mm-hmm. Make sure you double them up or have a few on the bottom so your party or supper can just take one out and have one there instead of like rummaging through your cabinets. If you don't have a party host helper, then they'll be there too for any guests that want to help out. If you are hiring a party host helper, it's good to give them the lay of the land. Where does the trash go? Where is the leftover wine or the extra wine if we run out? Make sure that the helpers know where the important things are. Number three, make sure there's enough ice. I see this all the time. And it's so hard because depending on the weather, you know, if we're doing a party in the summer, it's like sitting there melting. Have backup and backup and backup. Or know that you have somewhere local that a friend, a family member, a party host helper can run and go get some more ice.
Run and grab more ice. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you my pet peeve, because I've been to plenty of parties, believe it or not, where they run out of alcohol.
Yes.
It immediately ends the party. Mm-hmm. That's it. Party over. Like, if there is
no more vodka.
No more vodka, yeah. No more beer, no more wine. That's also a way to clear out your house if the party's going too long. But
yeah.
That's when they leave.
It is. I know. And that's a good point, too. Another tip that I have is to keep your bar simple, especially with the holidays coming up. A lot of my clients come to me and they're like, what should I serve? And I say, a signature cocktail, whether you like bourbon, vodka, gin, whatever you like and you think your guests like, do one signature cocktail based on that. Champagne or Prosecco, white, red, and beer. I don't think you need a full bar with like whiskey and gin unless it's important to you. But I think people are just as happy to have a glass of white or red, maybe some bubbly, throw some cranberries in there for some festive.
I would agree with that. And I think that it can get like a little out of hand if you have too much liquor.
Well, yeah, especially because people are, with the holidays coming up, November, December, people are running to a couple parties in an evening usually. And I mean, God bless like Uber and Lyft and things like that. That helps us. But you don't really need to be serving like straight up dirty martinis.
Sure.
And it also holds the bar up too. If you have a bartender, great. But if not, it gets a little kind of crazy.
Yeah. No, so. Absolutely. What's your favorite holiday beverage?
For Thanksgiving, there is a really good cranberry champagne cocktail that I like to serve.
Ooh, what is that?
So it's a little bit of orange liqueur. You can use, you know, whatever you use to make your Cosmos. Cranberry juice, shake it up, pour it in a champagne glass, and then top it with champagne and add a few cranberries. And you can have your cranberries frozen. It keeps the drink cold instead of ice. And it's festive.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
And I love stuff like that.
It's fun, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's fun to drink it. I like, for Christmas, there's a poinsettia cocktail that I like to make. It's similar to that, but it's more martini based. So vodka, cranberry with the champagne on top to give it some bubbles. All right. So I have one more. My fifth is music. So obviously, if you're having a home party, you're not going to bring a DJ in unless you're like really, you know, going all out. What I like to do back up to the invitation is have a question on the invitation. Hey, what's your favorite either party song or holiday song? And when you RSVP, just shoot us an email.
Oh, that's such a cool idea.
And
I
then put
that.
A mix together, right? So if it's like a party, just a normal party, and you're like, oh my gosh, that's my jam. That's like, you know, I recommended that. Or if it's a Christmas party and you're like, I love this Christmas song. They listened to me. So throw it on a mix on your, you know, iPad, laptop, whatever you stream through your home.
That's
and then it's like personalized and it makes the guests feel like you listen to them.
I love that. Well, great. Five good tips. Now, you mentioned Thanksgiving. Let's get into Thanksgiving. What are some tips to not be so stressed out? My mom just said to me, so are you hosting Thanksgiving?
And is this your first, you've done this before?
I've done it before, but like that was presented in question form, but it really meant you're having
hosting.
Thanksgiving this year. I'm not.
I feel like hosting Thanksgiving is like a big deal, right? I don't know. Society sort of like pumps us up or like maybe it's our families. I'm hosting this year. I've done a ton of Friendsgivings, but I've never actually hosted. So I'm hosting my mom and then my boyfriend and his parents. So five of us, which is not a big deal. But I still feel the pressure, right?
Of course.
Turkey better be good. So here are some of my tips for an easy Thanksgiving. Obviously, number one is hire a party host helper.
Number one. So you work on holidays.
It's our biggest day of the year.
Okay.
We're already booking out for Thanksgiving because here's the deal. I like to cook. You like to cook, but we don't like to serve it and we don't want to clean it up. And with Black Friday and people packing that holiday weekend in, the thought that they can wake up on Friday morning and their kitchen is like spotless is huge. So we even will send helpers out just to clean up in the later evening. They might take a shift earlier in the day and then jump on some dishwashing shifts too.
Now, I just need to correct you because you said, I like to cook, you like to cook.
Oh, you don't like to cook.
I actually don't like to cook.
All right, so we'll get you a caterer and a party host over.
So that was my question. Do you work with caterers and will you help coordinate that if somebody does want their holiday catered?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a handful that we work with in the tri-state area that we can definitely help with some menu options and things like that.
All right, so what's number two?
Number two, make sure that you have one or two extra seats at your table. So I don't know about your family or, you know, a lot of other families, though, have kids that maybe are coming in from college. Thanksgiving is a little bit more of a casual holiday, I feel, where it's okay to, like, just bring a friend.
Mm-hmm.
Some people don't go home to their actual family. So that day you might get a phone call or just someone show up at your door, like, you know, your cousin brought their friend or new boyfriend or whatever.
Absolutely.
So make sure you have a couple extra seats.
That's definitely the case in my family. There's always somebody at the Thanksgiving table that we either don't know or didn't expect to come.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
Always.
So just to make them feel welcome, have a few extra settings.
Yeah, sure.
But then along those lines, I like to be, and I tell my clients, be a little bit strategic about their place settings too. Table cards are really cute. What we do is we'll get an apple or a mini pumpkin, write their name on like just some gold craft paper, stick them with a stick pin. So it's like part of your tablescape, but it's also the place cards. And then pick who you want to sit where.
Okay.
And just have a few extras. So, like, if your aunt doesn't get along with your cousin, like, make sure that they're across, far apart.
Okay.
Which, you know, hopefully some families don't have those issues, but...
But it's likely.
And it's welcoming, too, to see your name there, and it's cute, and it's a fun touch for your decor. So, that's another tip that I have, is decor, keep it simple. You don't need to go out and spend $100 and some on a floral center cornucopia from your local florist. No offense to my floral friends. You most likely have decorations around your house because you've been decorated for Halloween. So the mini pumpkins, the larger pumpkins, leaves, a burlap runner looks beautiful. Just use some things that you have already, some votives. I wouldn't go crazy. The centerpiece is the food, really.
I just went to a pumpkin succulent class.
Oh.
And we put moss over the top of the pumpkin and then we put succulents on the moss.
Uh-huh.
So they say that we just made it. They say that it should stay alive. It should last as long as you water it properly.
Nice.
Which is kind of just spraying it with a water bottle. I should be able to keep that.
That'll
and
be great.
Have that. Yeah.
Throw a little burlap on there, some votive candles. You're good.
Good to go.
My last one is to have your guest. I have two. I have two more that I can talk
about. All right,
about.
Fine. Do two more. We can do six. Okay. We can do top six.
All right. Have your guests bring their own Rubbermaid containers if you think there's going to be a lot of leftovers.
Oh,
instead
great
of you
idea.
Like setting them home with all yours and then you're packing lunch the next week and you're like, I gave them all away.
Yes.
Just tell everyone. Bring one or two if you want to take leftovers home, if you anticipate leftovers. I'm sure there will be.
I always have leftovers.
Right.
I always get too much.
Too much alcohol, too much
everything.
Food,
yep.
Whatever. So here's some pie. So tell them to bring their own and then You don't have to worry about getting it back.
Love it.
Number six is to think about the things on your menu that you're serving that you can make ahead of time and freeze. You don't have to make the mashed potatoes that morning. You don't have to make the sweet potatoes that morning. Obviously, the turkey needs to go in, and if you're doing any salads or things like that. But if you're doing like a green bean casserole or a spinach souffle, those are things that you can make ahead and put in your fridge, or even make them a week ahead and throw in your freezer. So think about what you can do ahead of time so you're not as stressed that morning.
Okay, that's a good idea.
And I recommend when you're cooking Thanksgiving morning to make sure you have some Prosecco, mimosas, whatever, just to make it go a little easier, a little more fun.
A little more fun that way.
You know, drinking on the job, it's fine.
And one last question. I know you just gave a bunch of advice, but if you could give one bit of advice, like just one thing, the most important thing when planning a party, what is it?
Don't take everything so seriously. It's a party. That's really what it's about. It's like the FaceTime of getting together and spending time. Just enjoy it.
I need to take that advice.
I do too. Sometimes I know.
Thank you so much for coming by. What is your website? Where can people find you? How can they hire you?
Sure. www.partyhosthelper.com. You can just submit an event request right there, or you can always email us at parties@partyhosthelper.com.
Renee, thank you so much for coming by.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Again, if you'd like to find out more information about Renee or hire her party host helpers, you can go to partyhosthelper.com. Thanks so much for joining me today. I'm Kathy Romano. Have a great rest of your Sunday.
This has been Her Story with Kathy Romano. Her Story is produced by WBEN-FM in Philadelphia and airs weekly or on demand on your mobile device. Listen or subscribe at 957benfm.com.